one of the biggest challenges that product managers face is organizational structure and reporting line. Ideas are always much more than the resources to execute them. You're not exactly the CEO of the product. It's a huge misconception. Your role is like the conductor in an orchestra. You are working with different people, playing different parts, and your job is to make sure that you harmonize it and the music comes out good. The thing that gives me the most joy is the young and upcoming product managers that I have been part of their story. Hi there. My name is Nnamdi Azodo. I'm a product manager, amateur endurance runner, and you're listening to Spotlight Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Spotlight. This podcast is for curious minds and aspiring innovators who are leading the charge in the research revolution. We dive deep to discuss inspiring, informative, and offbeat conversations on product research and strategy. My name is Iwalola Shobowale, and I am a product research and strategy lead at a leading technology company in Nigeria. We have surpassed our 10th episode, and I am so excited. The engagement has been amazing. If you have anything, feedback about any of the episodes we've had, please send me an email at iwalolashobowale@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. You can also send me a DM on LinkedIn. My name is Iwalola Shobowale. I would also love to hear who you'd like to have on the podcast, what kind of stories you'd like to hear about. Please let me know. Send me an email. Awesome. So on today's episode, we have the privilege of hosting a remarkable guest. He's not just a product manager, but a true leader in the field. With over 12 years of experience spanning Nigerian banks, fintech startups, and now a leading global payment technology company, Mastercard, he has been instrumental in transforming the financial landscape. He has also created a course called the Complete Product Management Course that aims to guide early career PMs and help other professionals transition to product management. Now, beyond his professional prowess, our guest is also a really multifaceted individual, like you will learn today. He is an endurance athlete, a footballer, an avid reader, and someone who is committed to sharing knowledge with others. Today, we'll get to hear about his journey, insights, and unravel the enigma of why product management often faces roadblocks in organizations. Now, ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming the amazing, the brilliant, fantastic, fantabulous Nnamdi Azodo to the show. Welcome, Nnamdi.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. That was quite generous of you. Quite generous of you. Thank you for the intro.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Thank you for being here. I'm super, super grateful. So excited. And I know that the audience would gain a lot of meaningful insights from listening to this episode. So we'll jump straight into the icebreaker. I'll ask you a series of this or that questions, and you help us get to know you better. Okay. You would basically answer as quickly as possible. I might ask you to, you know, explain your answer, you know, or shed some more light on what you said.
Okay.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. Awesome. Okay, so let's jump straight into it. The first one, Android or iOS?
iOS.
iOS. Okay, great. Second, coffee or tea?
Coffee, always.
Yeah, you mentioned that you are like, and I don't know, is there a name for people that love coffee?
I don't know. I'm sure that'll be a name. I don't want to call it addiction, but it's fine.
Is it addiction? Okay, great. And then the third question, books or movies?
Books,
yeah. I think I follow you on Twitter, and I've seen that you always mention how you read a lot, and I mean, it's evident, right?
Thank you.
Okay, the next question. Would you consider yourself an introvert or an extrovert?
I think I'm an extrovert, yes. I'm comfortable saying hi to random strangers on the streets anyway.
Amazing. Do you think that helps in your role at all?
Maybe. I can't say for certainty, but it helps to, so, you know, people tend to warm up to somebody who warmed up to them.
The next question, Netflix or YouTube?
YouTube.
Yeah. What would you say you watch the most on YouTube?
Documentaries, and if your channel would be either TEDx or PBS documentary. Yeah. any of the, you know, one of those two will be my most watched channel.
Interesting. Do you pay for YouTube, by the way? YouTube Premium?
No, I used to, not anymore. When the card started acting up, so at some points I just haven't renewed. But I pay for Netflix.
Actually, don't worry. Pay for Netflix. No, no, the reason I'm asking is I find it interesting how I was paying for YouTube before we started having card issues, right? But then I realized that when we started having card issues and I was watching the ads, I even started enjoying the ads. So it was not a struggle for me to go back to pay for
True. I was saying telling someone recently on Twitter that I actually enjoy watching ads. I tend to look at the creativity. Okay, this one no go move me. Oh, this is a brilliant ad, you know, sort of. So I'm...
So then what made me now have to pay for YouTube is, you know, like some other features where you can't...
You can't close your phone and just continue listening to what you're listening
to. But for ads, I don't mind, actually. I like watching ads, Amazing. Awesome. Cool. So do you prefer remote work or in-person?
Remote work. Always.
And are you working remotely
well,
right now?
Yeah.
100%. Yes, I am. That's amazing.
I only go to the office occasionally to see human beings and enjoy their coffee and snacks.
Oh, you can see human beings. Are there people who work full time or go to the office more often than you do?
Some people go more often than I do. Some people just like it.
Okay, awesome. Okay, final question. Do you prefer mobile apps or web apps?
Mobile apps.
Mobile apps, yeah. And I don't know if you're someone like me who downloads a lot of, like, different apps. There was a time when I downloaded, what was that app that you have to swipe left, Abby?
Tinder.
The dating app. Tinder. So I downloaded it. And then someone was asking me that, why am I...
Why are you using this for?
Do you get? But funny enough, I really liked the onboarding process. So I was literally, that was the reason why I downloaded it.
True, true. I download lots and lots of apps, just try them out. In fact, to avoid similar experience, before I downloaded Tinder for a project I was doing, I had to say, babe, I want to sign up on Tinder.
Do you get?
I don't want to explain later.
Oh God, you go explain no evidence. Oh my Lord. Okay, so thank you, Namdi. I think we've got to know you a bit better. So we can just get, like, there's some other questions I'd love to ask, you know, to kind of get some your perspective, right? So, are you able to share, like, a bit about your background? How did you first become interested in product management?
It wasn't one big bang of a thing, right? Random interest here and there. Maybe I had done my role then. I had been doing that for like 3-4 years. I felt like, hey, I have done fairly well here. It's time to look for something else. And at that point, you know, I started to hear about product management and what product managers do. So it was a beautiful coincidence, and at the time where I was thinking that, hey, I need to do something else, I started to hear about product management. So I started researching, reading up, and trying to understand what that field is. And there were some people called product managers in the organization where I worked, so I was curious to know what they do, or what their job is like. And so I read a bit about product management and basically went to ask my manager's manager to say, I want to be a product manager. And luckily, for me, he said yes. And that's how I became a product manager in the organization. Coincidentally, the bank I was working for then, you know, was also doing a digital transformation. It was one big lucky happening, right? Some of these things played out on its own. Yes, I asked to be made a product manager, but the bank was also at that point undergoing a digital transformation exercise, and we had McKinsey and Co. consulting for the bank. So when the whole thing started, and I was among the pioneer members that were in that transformation team that gave birth to some other things that we ended up doing. So under that team, I became a product owner. So it was a bit of different things happening, you know, at the same time. I was feeling like I needed a career change. I started to hear about product management, so I started to research about it, and then I asked to be made a product manager, and then from there I became a product owner in the digital transformation journey that the bank was undergoing at that point. So that's where the love for product management really started from.
That's super interesting. So when you were reading about product management, like, what would you say are like the things that convinced you, like, that you'd be a good match for the role, for like the role of a product manager?
I wasn't sure I would be a good match, but I sort of liked some of the things, you know, researching part of it, asking questions, trying to, you know, galvanize people to build something. I felt like I was going to be able to do that by. I felt it was going to be an interesting thing, slightly different from what I was doing. That I was doing loan analysis before then, and I didn't get to talk to a lot of customers, you know. I didn't get to work with so many cross-functional teams, like I'm speaking to marketing, speaking to the engineering team. So I felt it was that kind of job that I was going to enjoy by, you know, engaging different people, working in that chaotic place where different parts of things are moving at the same time. That's, you know, I wasn't sure I was going to do well, but I felt it was going to be a good try. So yeah,
fantastic. Some of the things you mentioned are also things that, you know, drew me to UX research, collaborating with people, speaking to, doing research, of course, speaking to customers, trying to solve problems, are all the same things that, you know, made me interested in this field. So I find that so interesting. So what would you say is your biggest achievement and why?
Biggest achievement. I have been involved in a few things, right? In that professionally. The onboarding process, you know, my team and I created is sort of like the default onboarding now in Nigerian fintech space, where people just ask you for your bank verification number and then pull details about from that to, you know, create an account for you. It makes me really very happy that we've created that process, seeing it used over and over by different companies. I also feel very happy to be, I'm proud to be part of the team that launched Nigeria's first fully digital bank. But in all of this, I think the thing that gives me the most joy is the young and upcoming product managers that I have been part of their story, whether it's people that that worked with me at the very formative stage of their career, whether it's the people that I currently mentor, or the people that I have been involved in one way or the other, maybe helping them do interview preparations and work, you know, supporting them in one way or the other. So I think it's the next crop of product managers that are coming up in the Nigerian industry that I am lucky enough to be part of their success story. That is my biggest professional achievement so far.
That is amazing. I have two questions for you.
Okay.
One, how do you find time, like, aside your busy schedule, your family, your own personal things you're trying to do to develop yourself, and then you're also mentoring other people? How do you find that time to do that? My second question is, mentorship for me I have a lot of imposter syndrome around that. I ask myself, why do I feel I'm in a position to mentor someone else? So how do you, is that something you deal with, and how do you deal with that? So my first question was, how do you find time? Secondly, imposter syndrome, how do you deal with it?
Okay. First one, how I find time to do some of these things. I mean, like, there will never be, I don't think there will be time where I'll be, something has to give way for something, right? I don't kid myself. I can't do all things. I just have to sacrifice some things for some other things. So whether it's my personal time or I have to stop a project to take on another project, So there will always sometimes, so most of my, not most, all of my mentorship commitments is time bound. So I'm going to mentor you from now to now, from this time to this time, and let's see how that goes. And after that, we might renew, or, you know, you give way for another person or another set of people. So basically, something has to give way for some other things. And if it's really very important, just figure out a way to make out time. I don't kid myself. I just have to know that there has to be a sacrifice somewhere, whether it's my personal alone time that will be sacrificed, or someone, you know, some project will be dropped for another. On the imposter thing, I mean, first of all, I think I've spoken about this in a few places. I, even after many years of being in this space and doing some things, I still wake up feeling like an imposter. I there are some days that I feel like today is the day they are going to find me out. They are going to know that I'm a fraud. They are going to figure me out. Everybody's going to know that I'm not as good as I think I am, or as good as they think I am. Yeah, it happens to the best of us. And one person well, in the many millions of people that I saw a research that said that up to 80% of people feel like imposter at some point in their career, in their lives, yes. And the most, you know, the very popular Maya Angelou, 3-time Grammy Award winner, I have a quote of her where she said, "I have written 11 books, but each time I think, oh, they are going to find out now. I've run everybody. I've run a game on everybody. They are going to find me out." I mean, that quote, I refer to it. If after winning 3 Grammys, Maya still feels like an imposter, who am I? Right? So, yes, I feel like an imposter. I wake up some days, but we just have to deal with it and take consolation in the fact that we are not the only one. And yeah. I talk about this a lot, and I wrote about it on my newsletter, how to kill imposter syndrome before it kills you.
Yes, I love that title, How to Kill Imposter Syndrome Before It Kills You.
Yeah.
Fantastic, fantastic. Also to mention, the newsletter is called Workplace HQ. It's on Substack. So if you are looking for information like this, insights like this, you definitely need to subscribe, right?
Thank you.
Okay, so outside of your work, you mentioned that on your, I think you also mentioned this on your LinkedIn, that you are an endurance athlete. You've run like 1 million kilometers. All the running you've run, I don't think I've walked that distance in all my whole life. So how did you become involved in endurance sport?
I consider myself an amateur endurance athlete. I run a couple of marathons, half marathon, 10Ks. How did I get into it? I think it was during my university days, just wanting to jog around, you know, from wanting to jog around to finding out, okay, it's like it's interesting. But I really took running very seriously around 2013, where I was at the lowest point of my career, and running was the only thing that kept me going. So I found that, you know, the longer I ran, the more I felt better and enjoyed it. Then I go home, take a shower and sleep off, and have not having to deal with the things I was dealing with at work. So I continued running, and from there continued running, and then became so interested in it. And yeah, it's one of the places where when I get into, I feel this happy thing. I forget about all the things that I'm worried about. So it gives me mental clarity. I'm not even talking about the health benefits. Everybody knows that already. But it's a way for me to convince myself that I can do much more. So if I can do this running, I can take it elsewhere. And yeah. So sometimes when I'm also feeling like an imposter and feel down if I'm good enough, I remind myself, like, I've crossed many marathon finish lines, right? I mean, if I could pull my body for 2 kilometers, come on, I can face this.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
Your knees, how are they doing?
I mean, like, I'm still 30 plus, so the knees are fine for now. Hopefully they don't give up anytime soon, the knees and the ankles.
Do you have to do it, wear any, like, support?
No, not now. Okay. Not at least still fine now.
Okay, great. Amazing, amazing. So you mentioned that you are working towards an Ironman.
Yes. Well, it's a dream of mine. I would really love to. Hopefully it happens. It's a lot of thing, long swimming, running, cycling, all in at once in one day event. So I don't know if I would get there, but it's a dream of mine. It's on my list of 101 things to do before I die. So I keep a list like that.
Wow. As you're saying it, I'm like, if I find myself in the middle of such a,
God, I mean, you I would enjoy it. From what? Believe me.
I'm sorry, it sounds like the horror movie. So I'll first run, I will now swim, I will now cycle. God.
No, you. I'm sure you will enjoy.
Hey, okay. Because when you get there, just so that I'll be cheering
Thank
for you.
Thank you.
And I'm sure a lot of us too. That would be amazing.
Thank you.
Does the Ironman happen? Do we have any in Africa?
No.
No. Okay. Wow. Okay.
At least not that I'm aware of.
So maybe like 2 years, 3 years next.
You
year.
Are putting me under pressure. just before I die, hopefully, I live long enough.
Yes, you will. You will. Awesome. So let's get into the main,
for sure,
the cocoa of the conversation, right? So we want to talk about the challenges that product managers face in the organizations, why product management is not working in your organization. So what would you say are like the major challenges that product managers face in organizations?
There are many. Many, so things like, you know, ideas are always much more than the resources to execute them. That's one of the problem challenges for product managers face. In fact, in my previous place, we had that was pre-COVID, right? We had a section of the wall in the office where we labeled it parking lot. So all the ideas that people are bringing, yo, beautiful idea, fantastic. We just write it down and go and put it in the parking lot. First thing, it makes the person understand that we didn't throw away your idea. It's in the parking lot, and hopefully with resources, we'll get to it one day. So there's resource constraint. It's one of the biggest problems. Ideas are always more than the resources to build them. There is also that assumption that, you know, we should be able to go from idea to product, you know, as fast as we can blink our eyes. But then there are many other things involved, like user research, even validating that, is this the right thing to do? If it's the right thing, is it the right thing to do now? And many of the others. But I think one at the organization, that enterprise level, I think the one of the biggest challenges that product managers face is organizational structure and reporting line. I have seen some organizations where the product people report to the chief product officer, who reports to the CEO. I've also seen some other places where product people report to the CTO. I have also seen a small startup where the product people report to the head of commercial. All of this has implication on where the company is going and where the product is going. And it's a lot of companies are yet to figure out where exactly to position product people, or how to structure that for efficiency. At the end of the day, it's whatever works best for the company. But I think at that enterprise level, one of the challenges product people face is organizational structure and reporting line, and how it affects their deliverable.
So you mentioned something about, you know, how not every idea needs to be built, right? I really love the solution that you mentioned of having a parking lot. So whenever someone brings an idea, you're not just saying, oh yeah, it won't work because, you know, our tech debt is one something. You're saying, oh, Yeah, this is a fantastic idea. We're putting it here to test it. We're going to see if it works. Mm. But then also there are many other ideas here, right? I love that.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Exactly. Please go on.
Oh no, please go ahead. Please go ahead.
No, I think at every point in time there will always be more ideas than the resources to build them. So prioritization is one of the critical skills of a product manager. Should it be built? If yes, then when should it be built? You know, what has to give way for this to be built? All of those conversations need to happen. But one of the best things about writing it down, it makes the person who suggested that feel that, understand that, you know, your idea is not stupid. It's always welcome and we have noted it. However, we may not be able to get to it now, or let's see how it goes kind of thing. That's very important.
Yeah, I think that is a good way to actually, how do I say, not stifle innovation.
Correct.
Because I think that's one major problems we have, where it seems like, oh, that, you know, oga-centered
oga-driven development,
yes. Yeah, so it's that. I think this solution, this thing you've talked about, actually kind of solves that. So it's not only what oga says must be built that we will build. It is, you know, we have a bunch of ideas, we're going to test them, and we're going to see which works, and then we're going to see if it works at this time, and then we're going to know how to prioritize and build, right?
Yes, exactly.
Did I capture that correctly? Exactly. Awesome. So yeah, you also talked about organizational impact, which I think is a very valid point. But what do you think are, like, I want to get your opinion, what do you think are, like, the most common misconceptions that people have about product management?
Okay, I think that would be, you think, well, the product manager is the CEO of the product. I think that's a very huge misconception. Except you're the CEO of the organization, you may not be the CEO. You're not the CEO of the product. That level of autonomy that comes with being a CEO is not what product people have. In the real product management day-to-day thing, you will be doing a lot of collaboration, ego massage, getting people on the same page, trying to work together. You're not exactly the CEO of the product. It's a huge misconception. Your role is like the conductor in an orchestra. You are working with different people, playing different parts, and your job is to make sure that you harmonize it and the music comes out very, you know, good. So you don't have the autonomy to fire anybody. The people working with you in your squad, they don't have direct reporting to you. You don't have the autonomy to fire, the rights or authority to fire them. You may not even have the authority to hire people. You don't have. The people working with you, you have to, you know, lead them through influence instead of authority. It's a misconception when we, you know, say that, you know, as a product person, you are the product manager, you are the CEO of the product. I don't know where that came from. And it's been repeated so many times that it's always looking like it's true. So I think it's a huge misconception.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I think there's something else you attended the Product Dive, Product Leadership Conference,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
And there was something that AB Atawodi mentioned. She was the keynote speaker,
yeah,
right? So she talked about the importance of clarity. I'd like to know from your own perspective, right? Does poor clarity hinder successful product management, in your opinion, or from your experience? And if it does, like, how can that be resolved? What are the strategies that we can? I mean, I'm not saying you need to, like, break it down, mm-hmm. because I don't think this is the time, but are there things we can do to ensure that there's, you know, clarity?
Oh, definitely. Poor communication. I saw a video sometime in the past, I can remember, you know, where one person said something to one person and it had to be passed down different people till eventually. In fact, the thing that was said from the person A, when it got to the last person, was completely different. So poor communication, lack of clarity in communication can result to very big, huge, huge, huge mistake. So I think, yes, it's a very huge one. My rule of thumb with communication is that if you have to explain it more than twice, then write it down. So if you have to explain it more than twice, write it down. It doesn't mean you will still not explain it, but then you also refer people to, okay, check that page and this is it. You'll give you more context. Let me know if you have more questions. So yes, communication is very key, and as much as possible, just try to avoid any mistakes. And one of the things I do is to make sure agreements, next steps, or decisions are written down.
I totally agree with that. I actually even posted something recently on LinkedIn about how, you know, if you don't document, then it didn't happen.
It did not happen.
And you're right. If you don't write it down and you have to explain it again, probably this thing you explain to the first person is different from what you would even explain.
Two different. Correct.
So yeah, I totally agree with that. Documentation should be like number one. Awesome. So I wanted to ask you, right?
Yeah.
How, on a scale of like 0 to 10, 0 being like, okay, what, like, how mature would you say product management is as a discipline in Nigeria? 10 would be, you know, the perfect score, very mature, but like, you know, we're there. And then 0 is totally immature. In fact, we've just been conceived. So what would you rate the discipline of product management in terms of maturity in Nigeria?
I would say 4. I would say 4 over 10. I would say 4. Mm-hmm. First of all, generally speaking, product management is a fairly new field. And it's even newer in Nigerian and African space. There's still a lot of misconception of what the role of a product manager is. Should a product manager be involved with sales? Should that not be part of his KPI? And who should they report to? So I think, and these are global problems, not just Nigerian problem, but generally speaking, I think I would say 4 over 10. That's my opinion on the level of maturity of product management in the Nigerian space. We still have a few more years to go to get to the level that we need to get to. Luckily and thankfully, there are, you know, very many promising people doing fantastic things. There are many communities that one can join and, you know, basically learn. There are podcasts like yours now where, you know, people can come in, young product people can listen to, learn from industry people as well. So I think we are on the right path, and I think the future is quite promising for Nigerian product management. As we go along and we get to where many of the fantastic guys are founders and leading different huge companies, getting acquired or acquiring companies, I think we would be there very soon.
Yeah. So I've heard something interesting recently about how a lot of founders are actually the first product managers for their products. Do you agree with that?
Yes, in most cases, in a lot of cases, right? That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, the first guy you do as a startup founder, you might not have the luxury to hire, you know, different people. So you are the CEO, the founder, you are the product person and doing all of that. Yeah, in many instances, that's true. That's correct. That's true.
Yeah, I think I would agree as well. So I know we talked about how organizational structure is one of the main main challenges that we face as product management, as product managers, mm-hmm. right, in Nigeria. Do you think that's like also the main factor like hindering maturity of the discipline?
I don't think so. I think that may not be it. I don't know. I don't think so. I think some of the things that are hindering that maturity is, things like around community, things around networking, things around learning and sharing with each other, things about sharing your mistakes that the next person doesn't make it, things around networking and being involved in, you know, real global companies and learning best practices and transferring that knowledge. So I think it's more on that side than on the organizational structures.
Okay. Yeah, I think I understand that. I think I would also agree, actually. There was this conference recently, the Inspire Africa conference, Marty Kagan, I'm sure you probably know him.
Yes.
Of Inspired, right, and the SVPG group, And yeah, so they did talk a lot about, you know, organizational structure, but they, I don't think they really mentioned anything about community. So I think this is actually a good point you're making. And are there any communities you would recommend, you know, people interested in product to join or be a part of?
Yes. There is People in Product, fantastic community. There is Product Dive, fantastic community. And there are many other smaller ones coming up. Some are even female focused. I can't remember all of the many communities that I've come across in the last 2-3 years. But I think, you know, for starts, People in Product, Product Dive. Then there is also non-tech in tech. But that's not specific to product managers. So user researchers, product people, designers, quality assurance people, there is also that. So I'm very optimistic of what the future holds for the Nigerian tech space. These communities are very important, this networking and learning from each other, because iron sharpens iron.
Yeah, so I think, like, now that you're saying it, is even dawning on me more, actually, the importance of this community. So I know People in Product have this mentorship session that they do every week, right?
Yeah,
so I'm just
thinking
about it now. As someone interested in products, attending those things, right, you are learning. You're not going to make the same mistake, just like you say. You're not going to make the same mistake that people before you made, right?
Correct.
And I guess your trajectory will be faster to, like, you are going to avoid a lot of mistakes.
I mean,
and then that would also influence maturity.
That's just it.
Yeah. Okay. So I feel like I just learned a lot. Yeah. Thank you
for inviting me.
Okay. Awesome. Just two more questions, if you don't mind.
No problems.
Two more
no
questions.
Problems.
Yes. Awesome. So you talked about you know, organizational structure, right? And I know a lot of business owners, right, they just want things to be done. They just want to say, okay, we've launched this, we've shipped this, we're making this amount of money, right? How can product managers better align their goals, the goals of product managers are usually centered around, you know, solving problems for their customers, right? How can they better align their goals with the business objectives, which is most likely, let's make money. Right?
We're all in business to make money. Or rather, let me put it this way. We're in business to make impact. And to make impact, we need to make money, you know? So I see the role of a product manager as a Venn diagram of three sets, right? So there is the user. There is the user whom you are solving the problems for. There is the engineering team who helps you, who you work with to solve the problem for the users. And then there is the business, that's the third set of the Venn diagram, the business goals. It has to be very important, because the business is the one paying for the problems to be solved with the hope of making a return on that investment. So whatever problem you are solving as a product manager, make sure that it aligns with the, yes, it's user problem, right? But it has to align with the business goal as well. What that means is that you have to find a way, directly or indirectly, to convince the business that solving this problem will lead to XYZ return. It might not be immediately. Mm-hmm. It might not be directly. It might be, yes, this is building the foundation for something that will lead us to this other promised land. However, you cannot be solving a problem that is in, you know, direct opposites with the business problem, because, hey, the business can cut the resources for you that, you know, cut,
right.
I mean, just, or cancel the project or end it. So always be solving a problem that leads directly back to the business goals. And when it doesn't lead directly, make sure that it leads indirectly.
So this thing you said now, it sounds hard. I can't lie. Are there times when you've had to maybe like convince stakeholders or your guys, right, that this is the right way to go, this is the right problem to solve?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Many times. Many times. Okay. Many times. So you again, you are working for the organization, right? You don't want to be doing things that the organization doesn't want to do. So, but then there are also sometimes where the organization is saying you should go this way. But being someone on the shop front, on the front line, you know that that way might not be the better option. So it's your responsibility, whether you use data, whether you use intuition, you raise your voice. Not recommended, but you have to find a way to convince them. I mean, there's also that part, right? But you have to find a way to convince the business that this is a better way for us to go. I've been involved in that. I was also been involved in where I tried to make that, you know, convince, and it just didn't work out. And then you end up doing what Oga said, Oga-driven development. And it's also okay. Sometimes you do that, and then it's some reference points in the future to say, remember, we tried this. It didn't work out exactly. Let's try this other one. So sometimes you have to select your fights. Not all battles you should be involved in. And some battles you just have to say, okay, trade those minor battles for something better, bigger. Wisdom lies in knowing what battle to avoid. So yes,
right.
I've been involved in trying to show the organization, okay, let's take this way when the guys or the organization said this way. It's part of the job.
So what you've just said now actually sounds like a husband and wife dynamic.
I mean,
like sometimes you have to make your wife happy.
I mean, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy?
Right. Yeah, so I think that makes sense. Like, it's not everything that has to be a battle.
Nah.
Sometimes you win some, you lose some. But at the end of the day, like you said, you can let that be a learning point.
Yeah, true. There's a quote by William James, an American philosopher, who said, "The art of being wise is the art of knowing what to overlook." You know, just sometimes you just let some things be, let them go.
Right. I love that. Thank you so much. I really would have loved to make this as long as possible. I've taken up enough of your time. For people listening, this is actually our second time recording. The gods, the people that passed that beat, decided to cause problems for this recording. Benami has been a great sport. Like, he actually gave me more of his time. Thank you so much, Namdi. So before I let you go, please, do you have any advice for aspiring product managers out there? You know, I think being a product manager is tough. I tell people, like, in my organization, product managers, I'm always like, you guys,
well done.
Well done. Well done, because I don't want to be in your shoes, right? So any advice you would give to anyone out there who's like hanging on to that last piece of thread?
I would say what I usually say, which is, overnight success is 10 years in the making. Don't worry. You will be all right. It's tough, but it's a long battle. We're in a marathon, not a sprint. So don't worry. With time, it will make more sense. Keep pushing. Again, overnight success is 10 years in the making. And if you're trying to get into this space, you've been applying, it's not working, it just takes 1 year. So keep pushing again, keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing. You just have to be right once, right? You just have to be right once. You just have to get it right once. Like Naval said, just have to be right once. So keep pushing. Mm-hmm. Overnight success is 10 years in the making.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you so much. And that's a wrap on this enlightening episode of The Spotlight. I'd really like to extend my heartfelt gratitude to Namdi Azuru for sharing his wealth of knowledge and experiences and for shedding light on the intricacies of product management. If you are not following Namdi Azuru already, please follow him on Twitter at Simply Azuru and LinkedIn at Namdi Azuru. His Substack newsletter is called Workplace HQ, and I'll also link it in the show notes. One of my favorite newsletters is the one titled How to Kill Imposter Syndrome Before It Kills You. I found that so, so informative. I will also include the link to his product management course in the show notes. So if you found this episode as insightful as I did, don't forget to hit that subscribe button and please take a moment to leave a review. Stay tuned for more thought-provoking conversations right here on The Spotlight. Until next time, I'm Iwalola signing off and reminding you that innovation is the key to unlocking the future of product management.